you like to understand Rabbinic Judaism and the Gospels, and how one influenced the other? Well, I have a book review for you today. Hello, it's Malcolm Cox here, and welcome to What We're Reading. This is episode number 45. And today I bring you this book, The Gospels and Rabbinic Judaism by Michael Hilton and Gordian Marshall. Fascinating book. I came across the book through my wife, in fact, who worked for a while with the wife of one of the authors. In fact, we had dinner with the rabbi and his wife some time ago now. Really enjoyed it. First, let me tell you about my motivations in reading the book. Firstly, Christianity is essentially a Jewish religion, to all intents and purposes. I thought it'd be really interesting to read a book written by a Catholic and a rabbi exploring the parallels and the differences between those faiths, but also their understanding of how the rabbis of the days of Jesus and his disciples and the followers of Jesus, how they influenced one another. And that's led to what we have today of Judaism and of Christianity, and the relationship between the two, which is at times harmonious and at times very much less than harmonious. I thought it'd be useful to learn about that. See, I'd say that the Jewishness of Jesus has received a welcome re-emphasis over the last few years. A lot more podcasts, a lot more books, a lot more programs being recorded and broadcast about the fact that, let's not forget, Jesus was a Jew, and understanding him in his context is tremendously helpful to personal Bible study, to preaching and teaching, and to understanding what Christianity is meant to be. So I thought for myself it would be helpful to engage with the actual Jewish texts and interpretation of Scripture. Rather than just think about the concept of Jesus as a Jew, let me look at his cultural context and the way that Jewish leaders and teachers interpreted the Scriptures at the time of Jesus and around that first century. Let's talk about the basic premise of the book for a moment. The basic premise is that Christians and Jews think they understand each other, but they don't. This assumption of understanding prevents us truly learning from each other. At best, we miss the opportunity to deepen our faith, and at worst, we find reasons for division, for mistrust, and even sometimes hatred. Sad to say. Surely there's an alternative. Now, I found it that the way that the book was developed, the presentation, the method of presentation, didn't try and prove one side right and the other side wrong, but examined the thinking behind interpretation of texts, which then helps us to understand each other. They say this on page 36 of the book: "We cannot advance the dialogue if we try to prove each other wrong. We are required to wipe away the pain of centuries and the assumptions of a past when one of the main reasons for reading each other's texts was to prove them wrong. We get blinkered and we don't learn when we have that attitude. The stated goal is, as they say in the book, not syncretism, the mixture of traditions, but the knowledge of difference as a source for deepening our responses to God and each other. The study of the sources is an invitation to friendship. It is a way to deepen our comprehension of our respective traditions as partners in God's covenant." It's well said. So the point is less the detail in the examination of the texts, trying to find the right interpretation. The point is more to understand the thinking and the approach to the interpretation, and then hopefully enrich, perhaps Jewish people, one would hope, would find something enriching here, and people of the Christian faith would find something rich, enriching also. A brief word on the methodology of the book. This work brings together texts from early rabbinic writings and the Gospels. The writers are a rabbi and a Dominican monk, as I think I mentioned earlier. They explore together the common ground, the differences, and the insights that accrue from each tradition. The Jewish and the Gospel texts are examined within their contexts. They're compared and shown how they shed light on one another. The use of the Mishnah in the way that it interprets the Old Testament and the way the New Testament, or the way that Jesus perhaps applied the Old Testament, that kind of idea. And the book was written in a style such that it's meant to be a study guide. And that what the authors hope is that Jewish and Christian people would study this book and the texts together and then gain understanding together. The key ideas in the book that are covered are the Great Commandment, the synagogue, the parable and the mashal, the ox and the pit, which we will talk about a bit more later, the Shabbat, divorce, and who can forgive. So some interesting topics, some controversial topics, even within Judaism and Christianity. But looking at these topics from two different perspectives sheds light for everybody. There's a great deal here, and I'm not going to dig into the detail now because that's in the book, although I will pull out one of the chapters for a bit more detailed examination to give you an idea of what happens in the book. And that's the chapter called The Ox and the Pit. Let's have a look at that right now. The Ox and the Pit. What are the aims of this chapter? They say this, that the aims of the chapter are to introduce the reader to the halakhic texts, or halakhic texts, as it can be pronounced different ways, and to show how the concerns of such texts differ from those of the Gospels. So they describe halakhic midrash as this. It's a literature which uses scripture to provide proof texts for rules of behavior. The principles of halakhic midrash are the rules by which scripture is to be interpreted. So the Gospels show Jesus concerned with correcting the overfocus of the Pharisees on the detailed application of biblical injunctions. And they give the example of Matthew 23, verse 23. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You give a tenth of your spices of mint, dill and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy and faithfulness. Jesus is scathing here. Now, Pharisees of the day, they say in the book, would likely argue that giving their tithes meticulously, these Pharisees, was their way of making sure that they did apply justice, mercy, and faithfulness. That's how they would have perceived the reason for doing what they were doing. And the authors illustrate this way of thinking by commenting on the connection between Exodus 21, 28 to 22, verse 5, the teachings of the Mishnah, which come from Baba Kamma, which are in the show notes, and Matthew 12 and Luke 14. So I'm not going to go into the scriptures in detail here, that's in the book, but the Exodus passage concerns what happens when an ox or an ass gores somebody, if they fall into a pit, cause damage, get damaged, if one's beast gets loose and eats somebody else's crops, or if a fire starts and burns crops, then what happens, who's liable, who should compensate? What do you actually do in those circumstances? And Exodus talks about that. And it makes it clear that the one who owns the animal, the pit, or is responsible for the fire breaking out is the one who should make recompense. And they say in the book, notice how different this text is from parliamentary legislation today. Modern laws set out the rules. Ancient law codes set out examples. Our text gives a series of cases of accidents which could happen, and from this one is expected to deduce the general principles which could then be applied to other cases not specifically mentioned. So amongst other issues, the Mishnah, they say, is attempting to answer the question as to, for example, what kind of pit are we talking about? They say, does it mean a hole anywhere, even on your own property? And how deep does it have to be defined as a pit? Is it 2 feet deep? Is it 5 feet deep? When is a pit a pit? Similarly, what happens if the pit belongs to, say, two people? Who's liable then? The text in scripture doesn't say if it's co-owned, who's responsible. So how do you work that out? In what circumstances are they both liable? What circumstances is one of them liable rather than the other? Because there may be circumstances in which that would be the case. Now, for someone like myself, I tend to feel as I read through the Mishnah and all the arguments about the different interpretations from circumstances, aren't we missing the point? And a lot of time in the Christian faith, that's how the arguments of the Pharisees are presented, that they're missing the big picture. And they clearly were at times, and that is part of what Jesus is saying here. But we miss something, perhaps, of the purpose of the Mishnah when we only see it that way. We might think that these discussions miss the point, but they deal with very real life circumstances. If an ox falls into a pit and is owned by two people, then what should actually happen? And so the reason why a Pharisee would argue that they were simply working out what it meant to live with justice, mercy, and faithfulness was that, well, how do we know what to do in this circumstance and that circumstance? I'm just trying to work it out. That's what I'm doing. So the authors of the Mishnah wanted to discern how Scripture could answer practical questions. And I, as a Christian minister, have to work out how Scripture applies pastorally in different situations that the Scriptures don't directly address. And so the Mishnahs are trying to do the same thing. When we recognize the aims of the Mishnah, perhaps we can be more forgiving when it is misapplied. The problem is not so much the Mishnah. Perhaps it's in its overzealous application and where it misses the issue of faith combined with obedience. Perhaps that's more the point. The problem may not be so much in the rabbinic thinking as in the personal practice, how it's applied on an individual basis. If Judaism had or has a problem with this, it's not alone. Plenty of people of the Christian faith struggle with the same idea. The Bible has commands. One can obey them without the right spirit. So we shouldn't be too quick to judge, perhaps, the teachings of the Mishnah. Perhaps I could paraphrase Jesus regarding tithing in Matthew 23, verse 23, that we looked at earlier, and the ox rescuing on the Sabbath from Luke 14, which of you, you know, your ox falls into the pit, you won't pull them out, or the donkey, you won't pull them out. The locus of his accusations of Jesus against the Pharisees was not so much that they had codified specific events, specific aspects of implementing, say, the teachings of Exodus, but in allowing them to become their spiritual focus to the extent of neglecting weightier matters. And isn't that something that you and I, as Christians, need to be aware of even today? We can get so focused on the right way to do something or a particular way to do something that we miss the point, we miss the heart, we miss the spirit. We get so tied up in our way of doing things that we miss the spirit moving amongst us to teach us and show us where the heart of God truly lies for other people, for the lost, for one another in our congregations, and those who need mercy and justice, and for us to live in faithfulness. How does this help? And that's the big question, isn't it? Well, for me, it gives me a clearer picture of the difference in emphasis of the Gospels and the Mishnah. Let me give you another quote from the book. They say this: what kind of text then is a Gospel? To put it simply, whereas Mishnah deals mainly with halacha, the Gospels are virtually all agada, which teaches a moral direction, not rules. The authors define halacha as the law or the rules of behavior on a particular subject as agreed by the rabbis. From this word is derived an English adjective, halachic. That's coming from the glossary there. So their summary is that the Mishnah deals mainly with rules and how to implement Scripture, whereas the Gospels teach primarily a moral direction. Now, that could be argued and debated. I'd like to know what you think about that. Is that a generalized statement, is that reasonably accurate? Moral direction from the Gospels, application of specific rules into real life for the Mishnah. I'd like to know what you think about that. And if that's true, that might help us to understand why one of the reasons why Jesus clashed with the Pharisees so much is they had different objects in mind. We would argue as Christians that Jesus' object in mind was more close to the heart of Yahweh, of God, than theirs. But it may help to understand a bit more of the context of the clashes. Some of my takeaways from this book. Firstly, I feel now that I understand more clearly the rabbinic nature of Jesus and his teaching. And you read a rabbi writing about the Mishnah and the Gospels and the discussion between the rabbi and the Christian, it helps to understand more about the rabbinic worldview of the time and the way that Jesus taught. Secondly, help me to grasp more clearly the ways in which Christianity influenced post-temple Judaism, which is an interesting part of the book. And then thirdly, it helped me to gain insight as to why Jewish leaders and Jesus interpreted Scripture differently. And that has been enriching my own Bible study. Now, a couple of caveats before we finish. This is not a book for the casual reader, I have to say. You'll need to concentrate. You'll need to take time to think, digest. You might need to reread passages, paragraphs more than once, as indeed I did. For it to be of benefit to you, you need to be someone who's willing to think about it and study it. Secondly, it's not a book for someone who's easily annoyed by different views and interpretations of Scripture. Reading the rabbi's interpretation, reading the Catholic priest's interpretation, monk's interpretation of Scripture, there are some parts there that I wouldn't agree with. I found a little odd. But so you've got to be able to get over that, to be able to find the value in the book for yourself. You don't have to agree with everything. I don't think I've ever read a book that I agree with everything on. That's okay. But you need to not be too annoyed about it. So who would I recommend this book to? I think I'd recommend it to anybody who really wants to understand the parallels and differences between early Christian and rabbinic thinking around that first century time. I think that if you're interested in that, this book will help with that. The similarities and differences between Jewish scriptural interpretation and Christian spiritual interpretation, and then obviously application that comes with that. So those would be my thoughts. A thoroughly fascinating book, rewards proper study and focus, the Gospels and Rabbinic Judaism, and as I say, this edition is a study guide. Well, all of what I've been talking about in here will be in the show notes, and so you can look those up, and if you want to get the book, then feel free, and if you read it, let me know what you think about it. If not, if you've got other books that you've read on this kind of topic, of how Judaism and Christianity intersected and affected one another, especially in that first century. If you've got some books you have read and recommend, I'd be fascinated. I'd be very grateful if you could send them to me. If you've got thoughts and questions, you can email me, malcolm@malcolmcox.org. If you'd like my newsletter, do sign up at the website, malcolmcox.org. And I do hope that you found this useful. If you know anybody that might benefit, pass the link on. And if you haven't already done so, please subscribe to these videos and the podcasts. And until the next time, keep reading and tell me what you're reading that's helping you. I would love to know. Until the next time, take care and God bless.